KK2D.
Cassandra Echo Whiskey Kilo Tango. Look at you in a second, sir. As I see it, it's becoming a little bit moot as to who's really controlling it. If Congress is trying to control a rather technical area that used to be controlled by the Federal Communications Commission, and if the Federal Communications Commission, recent history seems to show that they have more political appointments for their leadership as opposed to technical appointments for their leadership. In other words, the person... See you in a second. Okay, what was that again, Eric?
I want to interrupt you for a second. I left something out. There's an organization called the SBED, Society of Broadcast Engineers, and they've been lobbying really hard to make it a law that the each FCC commissioner needs to have a technical, a very highly respected technical individual attached to them to help them make the decisions that they make, because 99% of the folks on the FCC these days are lawyers and not in any way, shape, or form technical people. Go ahead, Dick.
Yeah, that's really, very worrisome, because some of the decisions being made by people who understand the laws of physics of how radio signals really propagate, so to speak, would think that not the right things are being done at the right times. I mean, the recent conversion to more narrowband FM deviation on individual frequency assignments, on paper it looks good. It looks like you're going to be able to squeeze in a hell of a lot more services within the frequency spectrum you've got. If you're naive, you would believe that. You actually take a real transmitter, and you take what used to be so-called narrowband modulation, approximately 5 kilohertz of deviation. You cut it down to 2.5 kc of deviation. You think you're going to squeeze twice as many people in there, but each of them is now going to be getting a degraded service because the amount of real audio coming out of that FM discriminator receiver is a function of what modulation index you're using.
They're forcing them to go digital.
Yuck. And for those of us who are watching over-the-air television, it's now digital. Again, on paper, it sounds great. And the whole darn metropolitan area, I'm going to pick a number, some huge percentage of people used to be able to, at their choice, watch over-the-air analog television. The number of people now who can get an acceptable amount of reception at an acceptable range from the New York City transmitters by way of digital television is drastically decreased. If you don't have a high piece of land, line of sight reception, line of sight path between your television aerial and the Empire State Building, and if you don't have a rotator on it so that you can tune it to carefully get rid of the multipath that's making a digital discriminator, the digital detector go bonkers, a hell of a lot.
Repeater, time out.
I'm going to turn over to you in a second, Eric. A very large number of people are now being forced, essentially at gunpoint, to go over to the paid services of cable and satellite and whatever, because they don't have the capability, without putting up a great big high tower, they can no longer get over-the-air television broadcast, which used to be sort of a right of Americans. And that right has been taken away from us. I, for one, I'm one of the very few people still watching over-the-air television. Lucky for me, I've got high towers where I can put antennas on them, and I can negate some of these disadvantages. But on paper, this looked like a beautiful system. It's a mixed blessing from my point of view. Eric, who's in the broadcast industry, is going to give us his point of view, because he's on the front line, KE2EJ, K2RIW.
All right, a couple of comments. K2RIW, K2J. Now, the FCC looks at it from this perspective, that you have an antenna on your house, and it's 30 feet above the ground. All right? That's what they consider to be the ability to receive digital television. Now, going back into the early 90s, we had an organization called the ATSC, the American Television Systems Committee. And it still exists today, and they're actually working on a form of mobile digital television, which is somewhat different, but is compatible with today's existing system. There was a choice between what we call APSD, and COFDM. Now, all of you have used this COFDM. You can pick it up with the rabbit ears far away. COFDM works more efficiently in terms of having the ability to receive a television picture. Politically, that's a foreign standard, and we don't do foreign standards, so that was one problem. COFDM has another problem, to maintain the type quality of pictures that we have in terms of being able to transmit a 1080i picture requires 8 megahertz worth of bandwidth as opposed to 6. So that was another reason why they chose not to. Although Sinclair, I'm going to drop. Sinclair, which owns a whole lot of TV stations around the country, did an experiment with COFDM using 6 megahertz worth of bandwidth and 720p, which is acceptable for HD, actually, if you watch ABC or Fox or Channel 9, you're seeing 720, not 1080. They get pretty good results. Now, the excuse from the ATSC committee is as the receivers, equalizers get better, the ability to receive the picture gets better, and actually it's improved light years from the time that you got your decoder, your converter box that you're working with. The newer TV sets are working on a 5th, and now they're coming out with a 7th generation equalizer, which literally gets you back to the state of having rabbit ears and having it work, but I've yet to see it. K2RW, K2J.
That sounds very desirable, Eric. That if the capability of the 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th generation digital decoder can tolerate more and more multipath. And let me give a couple of words on that one. Back in the old days of analog television, if you're getting the direct signal from the Empire State Building and a slightly weaker signal bouncing off the water tower and a much, much weaker signal bouncing off of the building, what you saw on the screen was the main picture and a little bit of a ghost shifted to the right, representing the under reception because it's bouncing, it's going a longer path, it arrives slightly delayed in time, some number of microseconds, and 63 microseconds across the screen is one horizontal line, so each 1.5 microseconds of delay represents a certain percentage of that screen. Let me think now. Yeah, 1.5 microseconds, I guess, would be something like 10%, no, 1%. 1% of the screen would be the deflection to the right on that delay. In the case of multipath, when a digital detector sees the multipath signal, it tends to get what I call inter-symbol distortion. In other words, the ones and zeros of the direct signal start mixing together with the delayed ones and zeros of the reflected signal, and some of those areas that of on and off get filled in. And pretty soon the detector goes bonkers. It gives you a bar chart, so to speak, reading, and tells you that it calls it a weak signal. Let me drop it. It's my guess that at least 3/4 of the time, when your digital decoder for over-the-air digital television tells you the signal is weak, it doesn't really mean it's low in amplitude, low in signal strength. That so-called weak signal detection is really saying that the bit error rate because of the multipath. Well, multipath is everywhere. I mean, we'd like to believe that if I sit on top of a 30-foot high antenna on top of the roof of my house and I use my binoculars and I've got direct line of sight to the Empire State Building, I can see the Empire State Building through those binoculars. You want to believe the radio signal is going to follow that path. You believe that, I'm going to sell you the other piece of the bridge I own in Brooklyn. Ain't true. If there is any reflecting object in the environment by which the radio signal can also go to that object, reflect off of it, and then get to your antenna, it will do that. And you can't stop it from doing that. That radio signal goes everywhere. Every possible path is operational all the time. The only choice you've got left, let me drop. The only choice you've got left is, in theory, to generate an antenna, to design, buy, build, install an antenna that is so high in directivity that it acts like a flashlight, that it only has reception in that one direction when you aim that flashlight at the Empire State Building, and you're getting the direct signal only, and the rejection of the sides of your flashlight, so to speak, the skirts of that direction pattern, directive pattern, are going to reject all those multipath signals. That's one possible approach. I'd like to believe and dream we could go there. You go through the mathematics of that as to how big that antenna would be, how accurately you'd have to aim it, how expensive it would be, how much wind load it would have. You're rapidly going to say, forget it. So I'd like to believe that these higher
transits of that.
Okay. Do you believe that, let's assume now that back in the analog days, that the majority of people that were not living in the valley, and they were within 60 miles of Empire State Building, where an aerial on the roof used to give them very acceptable reception, do you believe that these higher order demodulators are going to get us back to that point? Is that advertising hyperbole, or do you think it's reality? And should we hold our breath until we get there, Eric? KE2EJ, K2LIW.
All right, a couple of things. Let me take them in order. As an example of the reflection, the multiplayer, before the World Trade Center went up, most of the people up north in Westchester got a pretty good analog signal. By the way, you can go into people's houses and watch them watching TV through snow and ghosts. And they're perfectly happy. It's the sync pulses in this country that would lock up first, and you could have a locked up TV set and a snow for fiction, right? The technology before analog television went away was pretty amazing, but let me give you the example. After the shooting on the World Trade Center went up, trying to watch television going up north was absolutely impossible. The radio waves would reflect off the World Trade Center, and the ghost was absolutely impossible to watch TV with. So what they did was they put up UHF translators, and that kind of solved the problem for the folks up north. So let's give you a real-world example of ghosts that are intolerable. By the way, there is something called GCR. Let me make it drop. On line 18, field 2. Line 17, field 2. No, line 9, thank you. Line 19, field 2. There is a thing called a GCR pulse. What it is, it was a ghost-canceling reference pulse, which would then operate a tap delay line within the receiver, and it would dynamically control the time of the RF was reaching the tuner. Actually, it happened in the IF, and it would did a very, very decent job of ghost canceling. So if you even had multiple rings of multipath, it would actually find the strongest one, which might not have been the direct signal from the TV transmitter, and work with that. And if it shifted and changed, it would follow. So that was a really cool thing with analog television. A lot of TV sets had it, and a lot of TV sets didn't have it. Depended upon the manufacturer, whether they advertised it or not, you know, as far as people wouldn't go to the store and say, I want to buy a TV set with GCR on it, because most people were not aware of it. Okay. Now, let's get to digital. As far as the new equalizers go, now let me read it recycle again. We are getting to the point where somebody 30 miles away or 40 miles away is not going to have as hard a time as they have in the past. Yeah, I actually believe that that's the case. The technology is getting better. This whole idea of pre-canceling ghosts, so to speak, is one part of the concept. But, you know, we once got into the discussion in terms of, like, a ghost in advance of the main signal. And so it depends upon the perspective in which you're looking at, which is the strongest signal. But what's happening now is that they're going to this new EVSD, which is enhanced VSD technology, which allows us to use MPEG-4 or H.264, which is a advanced video compression scheme. So we would get similar image qualities using a smaller part of the stream, utilizing less bandwidth. And that's the way things are heading. And there is a proposal, and actually an experiment that's going on now, that uses an incompatible system that eliminates all the problems. Now it's going to be up to ATSC and Congress and the FCC in terms of whether that actually comes into being in that cell. It's all a big question mark, but, you know, people are being forced to subscribe to cable and satellite, but there's a lot of what they call cord cutting going on because people don't want to spend the money anymore. And Radio Shack is making quite a bit of money selling antennas. K2RIW, K3J.
Okay, if I was buying an antenna that's supposed to be maximized in performance for one particular channel, no problem.
No, I left something out.
Okay, but let me finish this one, and that is the television aerials I buy today, the manufacturer makes some pretty tall claims, and I suspect a high percentage of those antennas do not meet those claims. Over to you, Eric, K2EJ, K2LAW.
Oh, the one really important thing I left out that I forgot, that should have been in the middle of what I was saying. There's a guy who worked for Boeing who developed an active antenna system that was demonstrated about, well, I guess 7 years ago already. Beautiful piece of equipment. It dynamically readjusted itself through the incoming signal, taking feedback from the equalizer. Works wonderful. They demonstrated all over Las Vegas, you know, at the NAB show. They literally put it in a car and moved it around. It was amazing. Problem is, it's too expensive. K2RW, K2J.
Every high technology thing, like the very first computers, were extremely expensive. The very first cell phones were very large and very expensive and so on. Does it contain platinum? Does it contain iridium? Does it contain gold? Does it contain uranium? I'm pretty sure the answer is no. Does it contain high technology? Of course. But with mass production, with the right kind of large-scale integration and whatever, is there a hope of this Boeing dynamically adjustable antenna becoming less expensive and available to the public? Do you see any light at the end of that tunnel, Eric? Or is this thing so elaborate? I mean, is it the equivalent of a 500 personal computer, so to speak, and there's no way around that. So is there no way of cheapening this device and keeping most of its performance? KE2EJ, K2LAW.
Also, please add, how much is too expensive?
Yeah, Bernie will buy it. So don't worry. Go ahead, Eric.
Guys, here's the thing. It's all a matter of investment, isn't it, now? This is at the point in time where over-the-air broadcasting was losing its audience to cable and satellite, because those were the newfangled things, and those were the things that gave you the stuff that you didn't get on the air. And that was before the economic downturn, and, you know, cable subscribership was up, and the satellite industry, which was, you know, originally started out being Hughes, and DirecTV was two separate companies, and Murdoch was, you know, trying to buy them out. There wasn't that much interest in investing in LSIing and making this part of every receiver, which meant there needed to be a standard, so that way the antenna could plug into any receiver, and they would all operate the same. And of course, the manufacturers wanted to do their own particular thing, so it was really more economic, and the desire to invest in the new technology to make something like that happen. Yeah, absolutely. It, you know, the price of that could have been brought way down into a reasonable range. I mean, at the time that it was put together, it's an experiment for one kind of thing. You know, it said probably, like, you know, I think they said it was maybe about $600 in parts at that point. So add some markup, some profit, and get your investment back. They sell a lot of units, and at that price, you're not selling any. So that was a problem in those days. But also with the new USB coming around, if it actually comes to pass, then that all becomes moot anyway. So, K2RIW, K2LAW. KQRIWK2J.
Eric, if you and I invented a real good digital signal process, or you were looking at a Fourier transform-like process where you're going to look at the slopes instead of the amplitude, you're going to digitize the slopes instead of the amplitude. Let's assume that you and I come up with a real good piece of software/hardware. We want to go to a foundry, and we want it to be really set up as a large-scale integration. You and I would have to spend a lot of money to make that turn into a product. However, that degree of complication is in every one of the microprocessor chips that's in every one of our computers. Because of mass production, we can easily afford them. So I'd like to believe that this Boeing adaptable antenna doesn't contain exotic materials. It just contains something that, to produce it the first few times, is going to be expensive. If there is enough need for it, I can see now there's a little bit of a problem. Let me drop it. In that we have, to some degree, cut everybody off. We've ambushed our television watching audience. We have converted from analog over the television as being one of the very popular modes. We've switched over to the digital mode, which has certain significant advantage, high definition television capability, and a lot more channels per channel, if you know what I mean. However, now, I'm going to pick a number out of the air, 60% of what used to be your over-the-air television watching audience has now essentially been denied until we do something about it. As such, they felt they had no choice but to go over to the paid services of with greater enthusiasm. They had no choice but to go over to cable and satellite television. Now that they're there, if I'm about to invest in this over-the-air television adaptable antenna, and all of a sudden my potential audience has gone away because these people have bitten the bullet and they've gone over to cable and satellite, do I stand a chance now of making the investment, hoping I'll mass produce it, therefore it'll get cheap, and will I get return on investment, or is the risk too high? Is that what the Boeing type people are now worried about? Bunch of guesses on my part, Eric. KE2EJ, K2LIW in the TechNet.
KQRIW, KE2EJ. Well, let me throw this at you. At the time that this was developed, we were still broadcasting analog, and we were simultaneously broadcasting digital. Although we knew the end of digital was coming, but the economists, or the accountants of the big companies, because there had to be a universal standard that works through all the TV manufacturers, they saw that as an insurmountable pain in terms of the number of over-the-air viewings that they were getting. People had gone to cable, not because it was a better picture, but because they got HBO, they got MTV, they got Showtime, they got TBS, whereas at over-the-air you couldn't get those things. So that's why the exodus from over-the-air television. But yet the TVs in the kitchens had the rabbit ears and the other sets around, because don't forget they charge you for every cable box, even when cable was in the analog days. But they looked at it from the perspective of, well, when you buy a broadcast camera may cost $40,000, $60,000, $80,000, $100,000, depending upon what you equip it with. And the reason for that is you may only sell 5,000 or 7,000 cameras throughout the entire world. You may have spent $6, $8, $10 million developing the product. Somehow or other, you got to get your investment back, and that's the way it happens. Oh wow, there's two planes. It's a helicopter and a plane. They were too close to each other. So the return on investment for them seemed too low. That's why they didn't pursue it.
Of all the
comments, Jeff, what a comment.
Dennis recognized, of all the proposals to improve over-the-air digital television, is the Boeing antenna the best one you know of, or is the equalizer, the third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth generation equalizers, is there light at the end of that tunnel? What's going to bring over-the-air television back to the 60% of the people that were denied once we went over to digital? If you don't have a house that's on 300-foot land on Long Island with an antenna that's reasonably high to clear the trees with direct line of sight to the Empire State Building, when you're 40 miles out, 30 miles out like I am, then you're not going to get digital television. There are 26,000 human beings living in this little hamlet of Dix Hills. There is one human being of the 26,000 that seems to be getting over-the-air television. And this is a somewhat, many people believe it's an affluent community. So it's not dollars that's causing it. It's the technology and the location and the hilly country and the trees around and so on. They don't have the ability to get over-the-air television, and they've given up. I don't think we're atypical, if you know what I mean. So where's the light at the end of the tunnel here, Eric? Is it better equalizers? Is it better antennas? Does it take some ham radio operator to take the concept of that Boeing antenna and boil it into something that is reproducible as a kit? K2EJ, K2RIW, detect that.
Yeah, it's K2RIW, K2EJ. That's all a doable thing. The seventh generation equalizer and the active antenna would be a perfect combination. It's an absolutely doable thing, but, you know, my other point is that if we had just simply gone COFDM, we wouldn't have all of these problems. Don't forget, COFDM is made out of 1,000 carriers, and its ability to withstand multicast is way far greater than ATSC has ever been or will ever be. But, of course, the problem with COFDM is that you get a smaller coverage area. The reason why it's used in Europe is a typical grade B from New York, let's say, puts you in two other countries in Europe. So COFDM really operates in a smaller circle around the transmitter and requires more power. So it's a disadvantage to the broadcasters that these transmitters don't have to be that much bigger. Operate with more power, which means a bigger electric bill. It ain't developed in America. Actually, it was developed in America by Zenith. And then Zenith was bought by a Korean company, so the Koreans is the only other country that really uses ATSC besides Canada. Everybody else is pretty much COFDM. That goes to tell you something. But, yeah, it's a doable thing. Even with the new system coming around, which requires newer gear, which means that your old TV set ain't gonna pick up the new stuff. You need another converter box. Blah, 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 so that's another expense. And the other thing is, with the FCC being so politically driven these days, now, if after the auction things go the way they want, you'll be able to get HBO over the air and pay for it, and you'll be able to get these other stations that you get on cable, and then with the new...
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
That's only the last sentence that got timed out, Eric. And we've got two people who want to make comments, both John, WK2T, and Dennis, NY2H. I can see that COFDM has a lot of advantages, but I think that ship has sailed, Eric. This FCC, this government, this nation, for whatever reason, has set its sail on 8BSB as our digital over-the-air television standard. And if at this late date you ask everybody to redo the design of their broadcast transmitters, redo the design of all of our receivers and all of our converter boxes, you and I could start a campaign to do that, and I think our chances of winning that campaign is very little. Am I wrong? I think that ship has sailed. We are committed to 8VSB. We're never going to get in this country the advantage of COFDM. I hope I'm wrong. Let me turn it back to you on that one, Eric. KE2EJ, K2LIW.
Well, interesting you should say that. Politics makes strange bedfellows. There's about 3 months ago, FCC issued an experimental license to all people, of course, Sinclair, to operate a newfangled COFDM as an experiment. So makes you scratch your head a little bit. But, yeah, I kind of agree with you there. APSB has its problems, but then again, so does COFDM. But not anywhere near as severe, so, you know. And we have this new-fangled, semi-compatible system coming about, which is supposed to, you know, beat the pants off of both of them. So, who knows? You know, technology does march on. K2RIW, K2J.
WA2SAY with a comment.
K2YO also with a comment.
Okay, we got Doug and Bernie in that order. We got people lined up here with comments on all of this. And we can dream, Eric, about COFDM versus 8VSB versus 7th, 8th, and 9th generation equalizers and extremely high tunable directivity by the Widgell algorithm in our antennas, exotic phased array techniques where the multipath is, we cancel those directions. The Department of Defense and some of the antennas I worked on did do that. In theory, you could have three or four desirable signals out there and three or four jammers all in different three-dimensional directions and with the right kind of a phased array, elaborate tuning technique, that antenna can peak up its beams on all the desirable signals simultaneously, reject all of the undesirable signals simultaneously. That is being done. I didn't say it's easy. I didn't say it's cheap. But it's something to dream about. And some of the antenna savvy antenna amateur engineers possibly should start experimenting with that. We'll soon see. John was on the long list of guys who want to make comments. John, Whiskey Kilo 2 Tango in LaGrangeville, 62 miles away. How are you getting in here that way, John? Whiskey Kilo 2 Tango, go right ahead. K2RAW on the TechNet. My name is Dick.
Okay, Dick. That's interesting. You got the right name but the wrong call sign. I was going to say, with that call sign, how did he know my name? The call sign here is WK2D, as in dog. Do you copy me okay, Dick?
Copying you very well, dog. Whiskey Kilo 2 Delta. Is your name John? Was I lucky on that one? Go ahead, Kilo 2 Delta.
Yes, it is, Dick. The name here is John, and I'm in Maspeth, Queens. You really got off on a subject there. I think that gentleman, I don't mean to be rude, but I think that gentleman asked about, are we going to lose any frequencies? I'm thinking he's talking about amateur radio frequencies. In any event, on Monday night, you guys have that AR news line that comes after the... It comes after the swap and shop. Let me let it drop. And I don't know if it was this past Monday night or the Monday night prior, but they talked about that, and I do believe it was the FCC is talking with Congress, and they're looking to get a $7.3 million grant to monitor all the amateur frequencies. The reason being, they want to know who's using what and how often it's being used. So the bottom line of all of that is that a gentleman on Newsline said, gentlemen, if you don't lose it, you're going to lose it. So in trying to answer that gentleman's question, that's what's going to happen. If people don't use the frequencies and they start getting this budget money, we're going to be in trouble. Now, it's not a definite thing, but they said if they do get the money, let me let it drop. They do get those funds. I think it was 7.3, I don't know if it could be billions, probably million. Then they get to continue to do it. So the hope is that that they don't get it, but chances are they will get it, Dick. So that was my comment about all of that. Back to you, Dick. WK2D.
The original man who asked this very interesting question, and yes, we've branched way off from it, because it's such a fascinating question. It was a KC2QYW Joe who asked, are we going to be losing our frequencies? I hope I didn't get that mixed up here. My list is getting a little bit discombobulated already. And broadcast is certainly something we worry about, but yes, are we amateurs? Are we going to be having our frequency shifted around? To some degree, it always happens. You take, for instance, the distance record in the microwave bands at 120 gigahertz by Dr. Tom Williams, WA1MBA. That particular band no longer exists. It moved to a significant number of megacycles somewhere else. So our higher microwave frequencies are always moving around. But are we going to continue to have an amount of spectrum where every octave of the band
something is going to be devoted to ham radio? The history tells me absolutely positively yes. And so are we going to completely lose a ham band? I kind of doubt it. But even if we do, it'll be substituted with something else because that's the way the ARRO operates. They're fighting very hard for our rights, and they'll do some bargaining. Okay, you broadcasters or you Department of Defense people absolutely have to have this particular band. What are you going to give us in return? So is there an absolute guarantee if you buy, let me drop an absolute guarantee that if you buy an expensive piece of equipment for one particular ham band, are you going to be able to use it into perpetuity? You know what I'm trying to say? The good news is that the moderate equipment we buy, let's take for instance that $40 Balfong or Roxxon type thing, which covers a number of bands simultaneously, not always with a Cadillac performance, but still the ham equipment we buy these days covers multiple bands, and if one of those bands on that rig changes in frequency, requires modification, or disappears, it's not the end of the world. That's a bunch of opinions on my part. I know you guys have got some other opinions. Let's see what Dennis has got to say of this list of people who want to make comments. NY2, HF. What do the people in Cutshaw think we should be doing, Dennis? K2LIW in the TechNet.
Oh, thank you, Dick. Actually, that's very interesting what you were saying. The way I see it going, I think what's going to happen is if there's a corporation out there that wants to ante up a lot of money, they're going to get the spectrum. And I guess hams think they're bigger than they are. There's not a lot of us. You may have Aral out there lobbying for us, but we're a pretty small minority of the general population. But going back to what you were saying earlier, which was really piquing my interest, let me drop for a second. I think that if a grassroots or a ham has the capability to make a terrestrial antenna to pick up these stations, and while the population, most of the population remembers when we had antennas on the roof for TV, not just the box, I think that it'll fly. I think people will flock towards it because it means they buy an antenna and they can watch these shows and never have to worry about it again. Because at the end of the day, when you're looking at an almost $200 bill per month for a cable where 99% of the stations you never watch because they're junk, why not lease a car instead of have cable? It's just gotten ridiculous. So I think anybody who's smart enough to design an antenna to pick up the terrestrial stations, I think is going to make a fortune. Back to you, Dick.
Okay, so do I need to give us a comment on the spectrum?
Matt recognized, and you were on the list of two or three other people that Matt sustained in there. Step by.
Yeah?
When it comes to building antennas, the total number of antennas that have been designed and built could very well be 10 times higher by ham radio operators than by comparison to commercial companies. Obviously, by some of the articles we've seen recently, there's some extremely smart antenna designers who are doing it by way of their ham radio license, ham radio gathered knowledge, and so on. So should we start influencing those hams to apply that technology, that smarts, that ingenuity, that perspicacity to solving the multipath problem of digital television over the air? That's a very worthy cause, as I see it. Yeah, I get 50 channels because I'm high enough in location, got an antenna in a good enough spot where I can watch channels from New Jersey, New York, Long Island, Connecticut, and so on for digital over-the-air television. I'm getting about 50 channels. That's the good news. There's bad news. Let me drop. The bad news, obviously, I'm getting none of the pay-per-view channels. I'm not getting Showtime, Movie Channel, Home Box Office, and so on. I have to do without those. I'm getting the PBS channels by way of my other kinds of satellite television. I can watch NASA Select and so on. So the stuff that's valuable to me, I'm getting it. And a number of my friends are paying as much as $300 a month. That's around $3,000 a year for television, something that used to be free. Yeah, they're getting more stuff, but only a very small percentage of are they watching. And so for the affluent people, they just write the check and the problem goes away. And that's not the majority of us. The majority of ham radio operators are not that affluent. And so a couple of $1,000s a year to watch television, if they can negate that by designing a good antenna, that's something worthwhile. Let me drop one other thing I wanted to say, what Dennis said. That is, you're saying that we hams are very rare. To a degree, it's true. But right now, according to the editorial page of QST Magazine, there's 700,000 hams in the United States, an all-time high. I think it was Dennis a couple of weeks ago that was very worried that we're all becoming white hairs and that we're becoming an extinct species, ham radio operators. There's more of us now than at any other time in history. Yeah, there's only one per 500 in the population. We're rare birds. And for that matter, there's only one in 500 in the population when it comes to people with a private pilot license. Any of the high-tech areas, there's only going to be a kind of a minority to it. But that's a very active minority that's capable of doing something in both of those cases. And I think we can. So maybe it's time that we start campaigning these guys that there is light at the end of the tunnel. Design a better antenna and a higher percentage of people free of charge. To good over-the-air digital television. Worth a try. Doug wants to say something about this. We got Doug, Bernie, and Matt in that order right now. Doug to me, QSAY. What's the solution to this out in your neighborhood, Doug? K2RIW in the TechNet.
I also have something to add. K2J.
I look recognized, but Doug first. Go ahead, Doug.
Okay, K2RIW in the TechNet. This is WA2SAY. Well, I think... I think the over-the-air television is doomed to failure completely. First place, you have to have the cable if you're going to have the internet. Any kind of internet over the telephone lines is just useless. What's more, the telephone lines are going away. The telephone company is already planning to take some areas right in Long Island, as a matter of fact, some areas, and just remove the copper altogether and say if you don't have a cell phone, you don't use the phone. There's a lot of other good reasons, I think, why the over-the-air is not going to come back. You mentioned some of them, of course. You don't get the HBO and so on. The aesthetic effect, the woman of the house does not like to see that thing on the roof, and she's been living without it now for 20 years or thereabouts, and I don't think she's going to go back to having the thing on the roof. And... I suppose there's a couple of other things that I've forgotten by this time, but I just do not see, I don't care how good the antenna is, or if it was given away free, I don't see it coming back. Oh, the other thing, of course, is that the commercial cell phone operators and so forth and the various other digital services want those frequencies. They want the TV off the frequency altogether, not more frequencies, less. Back to net, WA2SAY here.
I hear you, Doug. You draw a slightly gray picture here, and it's got merit. We hear from time to time, will over-the-air television broadcasts become a thing of the past? And I sure hope not, but I guess there's no guarantee on that one. Internet connection in some active communities, which have got the right kind of 802.11 nodes, you can get internet wirelessly. It's less than desirable. If you really want the zillion bits of bandwidth of your internet, it's going to have to be one of the paid services most of the time. But I still think we should try that for that antenna, even though it looks glum, because it's a whole area that has rarely been touched. When it comes to phased array techniques, even very simple phased array techniques, the four quad or four square or whatever it's called is a kind of phased array antenna. Very few amateurs have gone there because they think it's rocket science. They think it's difficult to understand. The TechNet tries to do something about that. Let me drop.
KC2QIQ with a comment there?
Glenn recognized KC2QIQ. Okay. There's a long list of people who have all got comments here. the just understanding phase shift. If you have a dual channel oscilloscope, and you've got two waveforms on it, and one's a little bit ahead of the other, and you try to explain phase shift to many people, they have quite a bit of trouble with it. And so phase shift is just a minor building block of what's going on in the so-called phased array antenna. So getting people to understand it before they can start building it and experimenting with it is a little bit of a problem. But I still think we should try. Bernie was the next guy on the list. K2 Yankee Oscar. Bernie, what's going to correct all this? K2LIW and the TechNet.
Good evening, Dick. I'm going to go back to your example you were giving of the good people at Dix Hills and how that there's only one of them that is able to get access to this. And I'm going to say that it's not that they are unable to, it's that they are undesirable to. They have no desire to get over the air television because they've made a consumer choice that their cable access gives them more feature and function. Also, if a reasonably smart household can get their cable access for $35 a month for a single television, so the numbers being quoted here are a little bit skewed. For $35 a month, that's not that much for a year. And what we're seeing is that the cable companies are going out of their way to provide more features and functions. I can now watch my favorite TV show that played last Tuesday and not have to record it. They automatically record it and make it on demand available to me. So the cable companies are really putting out a lot of effort to provide unique content and unique features and functions that nobody over the air is going to offer. Now, if somebody, for example, I'm a Big Ten football fan, if somebody's going to put the Big Ten channel over a broadcast over broadcast television, then I'll go buy an antenna. But right now, there's nothing I can get over the air that I can't get on my cable, and for $35 a month, I can get it a whole lot cleaner and easier. Does that make sense, Dick?
It makes a lot of sense, Bernie. However, isn't the $35 a month only the basic service? That if you wanted some of the other pay-per-view and HBO, Cinemax, Showtime, Turner Classic Music, if you want any of the so-called premium channels, aren't you going to have to pay more than $35 a month? K2IO, K2LAW?
Yes, that is correct, but I believe in the example at a heads-up apples to apples. I'm saying at just paying a $35 a month access charge to get the standard channels. We get HBO as our part of the standard, but let's talk about Cinemax or any of the premium movie channels we don't get. But I view it as basically a portal into all of this content. Now, let's talk about competition for cable. There's an interesting device called a Roku that uses my internet service and gives me a ton of video content. Television shows, older television shows, movies, etc., premium pay content, etc. So basically the internet folks are looking to take a swipe at the cable companies to get a piece of that action also. So really what we're talking about here is what is the delivery mechanism. It's not so much, let me rephrase that, it's not so much the delivery mechanism as it is the content that is available over it, and that's what people want to pay for.
I'm suddenly realizing that I remember seeing a demonstration by my good buddy WA5VJB, Kent Britton, built with his own hands a kind of a UHF antenna that looked a little like a miniature Christmas tree with some kind of an envelope over it. I think the thing stood about a foot high, and it was half a foot in diameter. And inside there were multiple elements with a switching arrangement where, when it comes to digital television, that antenna-like device, which had, let me pick a number, $30 worth of hardware in there, would automatically adapt itself as you tune to each one of the channels to give you the best reception when it comes to, I'm going to call it jammer to signal ratio, but it's called multipath to real signal ratio. So I'm not convinced it has to be rocket science that makes an adaptable antenna. He did it, and he demonstrated it at one of the national, here we go, National Association of Broadcasters meetings. And so that thing came close to become a commercial product. Why it did not, I don't know. I'm going to be sending some emails to Kent this week to find out more about it. So does it have to be the zillion-dollar thing that was demonstrated by Boeing? Maybe the answer is no. maybe there's still some more light in the end of that tunnel. Let's see what Matt's got to say about all this. KC2YDT, K2RIW, go ahead, Matt.
K2RIW, KC2YDT. As far as the total spectrum goes for over-the-air television, a lot of people out west, believe it or not, still use over-the-air television. And as far as getting back to the whole original question about, you know, the amateur radio bands being in jeopardy, et cetera, I don't see a foreseeable change, you know, with a tremendous amount of frequency loss at all, especially out west, because out west they're using it, ham radio, even public service is using ham radio a lot more out west than they are in areas such as New York City. Out west, for example, let me let it drop. You have a lot of search and rescue groups who have public service frequencies in the 150 range as well, but also are using ham radio frequencies for search and rescue use, etc. So I don't see a huge change in the amateur bands and in the you know, over the air spectrum for television. Out west, I see it a lot more than you would see it in an area like New York City and the metropolitan area. K2RIW, KC2YDT.
Yeah, thank you, Matt. And you drew a much more glamorous picture. And I hope you're right, and I think you are. The frequencies we've got, I think 98% of them we're going to hold on to. If we could look with a crystal ball 5-10 years from now, I suspect that 95-98% of our current frequencies we would still control. And the few that we're going to lose, the few that are going to be rearranged, where you've got to reprogram your frequency synthesizer so it can cover where that X ham band has been moved to. The VHF, UHF, SHF guys have already been doing that. It's not quite as big a deal as it sounds like. So it's not the end of the world. Some of that's going to take place, sometimes for good reasons, sometimes for bad reasons. The most good for the most number of people is supposedly the motivation of FCC and Congress and whatever. We know darn well that quite often there's more politics involved. Eric and then Glenn in that order are on the list of people making comments on this. KE2EJ, KQLIW. Go ahead, Eric.
Okay, first let me make sure you can hear me. Can you hear me?
You sound beautiful. Please proceed. Best you've ever sounded.
Oh, you're full of it. KQLIW, K2J. All right, couple things. One, they're not interested in HF. HF is useless to most of these other companies. They want, you know, from merely 200 megahertz and up. That's one thing. Don't forget, we're about to lose a little chunk of 900, and that's before the FCC starts monitoring. They're interested in the HF band. One thing I forgot to mention, mobile digital television. The saving grace for broadcast is that, like, in Chicago, in Iowa, in Texas, and in a couple of places in California, they're transmitting mobile digital television. Cell phones being sold in that area that have the receivers built into them, and they work, and they're becoming more popular. And not only do they only offer their own station fare, they offer some of the premiums like HBO, CNN, Showtime, that kind of stuff. So that's the future that the broadcasters and the transmitters are looking at. Department of Homeland Security absolutely demands that we have over-the-air broadcasting, be it AM broadcasting, which they're actually going to revisit now and go over, FM broadcasting and television. And as a plus for us, Department of Homeland Security is lobbying for amateur radio in Congress. And interestingly enough, the lawyer that we have at the AWRL is also the same lawyer, the same person that does most of this stuff for the Society of Broadcast Engineers. So, as much as the other guy thinks that broadcasting is dead and a dying art, it's it's not the way it's going. The broadcasters are looking out for themselves. And when the auctions finally come up, it'll be interesting to see how that all fits. K2RIW, K2EJ. Glad to hear some of that information, Glenn. I mean, Eric. Well done. Okay. Run that by one more time. Why is the Department of Defense demanding that over-the-air broadcasts must continue to exist? Is that force, what is it called now? Is that Social Security? No, what, the modern-day equivalent of Connell Red, if you know what I mean. Is that for public safety reasons, Eric? K-E-2-E-J, K-2-L-A-W?
Yes, that's part of the emergency alert system, the GIS. The Department of Homeland Security has acknowledged and has written many papers on the fact that when there's a natural disaster or a national emergency, all the wired services fail. That's the internet, that's the telephones, that's the cell phones, that's all that stuff. Whereas that the broadcasters, even broadcasting straight to the cell phone, even though he's not getting cell phone service, will still be able to disseminate presidential messages and EAN notices.
Hey, this is too wide to deal with another comment from the host.
Okay, when we come back around to you, Matt, Glenn is next. I like what you're saying, Eric, so it's sounding better and better. You're sneaking in some good news here. Seventh generation equalizer, fancy phased arrays, antennas, and the Department of Homeland Security demanding that over-the-air broadcast will continue to exist. So, left-handed Willie, we're getting good information in all this bad news. Glenn, hope you've got some good news. KC2QIQ, K2LIW. Go ahead, Glenn.
Good evening, Vic. I think most of the points that were just brought up over the last few pretty much covered most of my thoughts, but I'll still be listening, KC3QIQ.
I expected you to add to this one. Okay, sounds like we've hit some of the good points. I know we're getting awfully far off-center of Joe's original question, but still, he's tickled a very interesting subject to a whole lot of people. Matt, KC2YDT, K2RIW, go ahead.
K2RIW, K2YDT. Just like what I was saying with the over-the-air television and all that stuff, a big issue which is going on in Congress a lot regarding all that is what happened during Katrina. With Katrina, how we had so many different agencies working and no one really being able to communicate with their base a lot. With amateur radio, and believe it or not, that's a requirement now for all urban search and rescue workers and search and rescue groups, is to have their amateur radio license. On our trailer that we have a over-the-air television set up, so we can get television anywhere we could set up the antenna. So it's really, really big into public service. And like I said, the more rural you get, the more you see how valuable amateur radio and all these over-the-air stuff, television and stuff really is important to the public service emergency preparedness perspective. K2RIW, KC2YDT.
Since when it comes to, thank you, Matt, and what you just said is leading me to go back to Eric with another question. Eric, where your EAS, Emergency Alert System, sort of guaranteed that broadcast centers must be able to comply with it, and I think a good portion of that now is being motivated by the Department of Homeland Security. From where you stand, Eric, will the Department of Homeland Security defend amateur radio frequencies because of what we do with it? Is there a chance that we have at least one more ally, as well as the ARL and others? KE2EJ, K2LIW.
Sorry, Dick, I had to step away for a moment. Do you want to repeat that?
Very good. Emergency Alert System,
CAS, if I understand correctly, is something that you, as a broadcaster, must